Well, good morning, everyone. For today, for my introduction, I would like to do something maybe just a little bit different. I want to give a biography, kind of a background of a man that we can hold up as our template for my topic today. This man was the youngest of a big family. He was, his father and his grandfather were homesteaders. I think it was maybe the Roosevelt era that would give 80 acres of land to homesteaders up in northern Wisconsin. So those were some rough and rugged men. So he was a descendant from grandfather and then father, and then he was the youngest of a big family. Well, he was the only one that really embraced the farming, so he wanted to be a farmer when he grew up. Well, he was out milking cows one night, and on the radio came the World Tomorrow telecast. And he heard Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And he just, God was calling him. His ears went up and he said, "What is this? I want this." He called the local minister, and local back then was about a 3-hour drive. So he's northern Wisconsin, and I think west of Madison was where the church was. So here he's got 5 kids, and he's got a farm, and he's milking cows twice a day. And now he's going to start traveling 3 hours on the Sabbath to go to church. Well, all his neighbors kind of thought he was losing his noodle. You know, they thought he was going nuts. His relatives, even beyond going nuts, they were getting angry that what are you doing? You know, you're going to run the farm down. Farmers can't take off one day a week. They just can't. When the hay is ready, you've got to go out and bale the hay. When the field is dry, you've got to seed. What is he doing? And then it came that once a year he took off with the whole family for 8 days. Well, needless to say, this man was a faithful member, and he was called by God, and he responded to the call. He called, chosen, and faithful. As he got older, he fought battles all his life. He was a little guy, but he was old school German Wisconsin farmer. He had wrestled with a bull one time that got wild, and the bull weighed like 2,000 pounds. A Holstein bullet was rolling him around, beating him up. He came to church that one time all black and blue. One time he was working on a silage unloading wagon, and if you know how those things work, they got big tines that break down as the apron brings the silage forward. He was too close to that. He got sucked into that, and he got run through the tines of the silage unloader, and if you see how they're spaced, he should have been dead. But so he had battled all his life. He was a scrappy little, and he was old school. You know, if you didn't want to get him mad at you. Well, him and his family were faithful. And as when the church, well, we all know what happened in the 90s. His family stopped coming. And he had a regroup, and him and his wife were very close. They regrouped, and he found the United Church of God. They were very faithful there. And then, to abbreviate this story, I mean, we could talk about him for a long time. When he was in his 80s, they've been married over 50 years. They had 5 children. They went through all those endless trials together. Well, his wife passed away. And he was a widower. At first he went into a deep despair, and he was pretty despondent. I think for a while he didn't go to church. And then he finally realized that, you know, what am I doing? If I'm going to meet her again, if I want her to be proud of me, I want to see her again, I want her to say, "You made it." So he got up, got his second wind, and kept going. He's in his 80s. He's given the best sermons that we've ever heard up in Wisconsin. He got so weak from being beat up all his life and working so hard. His knees were shot. He had arthritis. He would go up there with his little cane. After a while, we had to have a table for him because he couldn't stand up that long. Kind of reminded me of Mr. Armstrong. And then, you know, just when he thought his life was over, he regrouped, and he was finishing strong. In his 80s, and he's being a light to everybody. And now one more time, he had to get beat up. He lived just a little ways from his son-in-law, or his son and his daughter-in-law. They always were close. They always checked on him. But he was so independent, he always took care of himself. Well, one night they saw the light wasn't shut off in the farmhouse, and there's nothing unusual about that. The next day, the daughter-in-law went to check on him. Well, there he was laying. He had a stroke that night, and he was laying there without any blood flow for hours. And, you know, I would kill most people, but he was so tough. They took him into the hospital, and he went into some rehab, and he bounced right back, and he was strong again. They said, you know, this guy's going to live to 100 years old. He's so tough. But this time it was a little different. This time he had, because there was so much lack of blood flow, he had some brain damage. So he went from being clear-minded, giving sermons, to now he was like, he was just so confused. He would call us up in the middle of the week. He'd say, I'm all ready for church. Where are you guys? You know, it's a Wednesday afternoon. You know, I mean, and he knew he was confused. He'd call up and say, this is confusion here. And he was so frustrated because he knows he could have been better, but there was some brain damage there. Well, needless to say, now his family and all those around him, they thought he was kind of nuts, even keeping embracing that truth and never letting go, because all that stuff was done away with. Why are you holding on to that? Why do you keep keeping the feast, keeping the Sabbath? That's all he cared about, was making it to the Sabbath. He called us up constantly. Aren't you coming to get me? He wasn't clear, but you could see what was in his heart. He wanted to be to the Sabbath. Well, God in his mercy, we were all praying for him. One day, let him pass away. But even at the end there, he was an inspiration to everyone in the church. And especially, God was using him to teach things to his family. At his funeral, there was probably more people. There was more people than what's here today. And everybody, even though his family, the church members, we didn't think that, but the other people, you know, he's a great guy, but he was a little goofy. You know, because we're so out of sync with everything. And now there was a Bible there that was so worn out because he read it so diligently. I mean, there was no dust on it. It was just, the pages were just worn out. I want to take this person now because he was resting. God gave him rest. And let's put him into just the near future. It might even not be too far away, the near future. He's resurrected. He's got sons, grandsons, great-grandsons. He's probably even got great-grandsons. If some of them are alive when the millennium starts, and he's resurrected and he's shining like the sun because he's God's jewel, what's going to be his reaction? Well, look at me. Who's crazy now? You know, look at how I was right all along. You guys should have been listening to me. Okay, you know he's not going to have that reaction. God has a way of humbling us. There's a beauty. There's going to be a lot of joy on that first day. He's going to get to be with his wife again. And she's going to be proud of him. But after that first day, there's going to be something. This is my topic today. God is going to teach us on our first day humility. He's going to say to his grandkids, look at what God has done for me. Not look at what I did. Look at what God did for me. Now he wants to do that for you, and I'm here to help. Now look at the different attitude. We see people in the joy that we're going to have on that first day of the reunions of seeing Jesus Christ and knowing it's all going to change now. There's going to be joy, but there's going to be something else. And this is my topic today. There will be a day when we really truly understand what humility is. That's my topic today. He's going to say, what can I do to help? The people in the world, look at the most joyous moments they have. Look at the guys that win the Super Bowl. Oh, they're dumping Gatorade on each other and they're running around with a big foam finger. Oh, we're number one. We're so great. They go to Disneyland. They get drunk and they throw the Lombardi trophy from boat to boat, you know, and they just act like they're... And is that satisfying? As soon as they win the first one, what do they want? They want to win another one and then another one. Is there anything satisfying about that? So why are we going to be satisfied? Let's turn over to Revelation 1. Why will we be humbled? Revelation 1 and 13. And in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to his feet, girded on his chest a golden band. His head was, his and hair were white like wool, white as snow, and his eyes were a flame of fire. His feet were like fine brass and refined in a furnace, and his voice was the sound of many waters. His right hand were the seven stars, and out of his mouth went a two-edged sword. And his countenance was like shining in its strength. And when I, John, And remember, this is John, who saw Jesus Christ crucified, he saw him resurrected, he saw him sent up to heaven, he saw the transfiguration. This is John. When I saw him, I fell at my feet as if I were dead. When we're changed, we're going to meet God. Have you ever thought about the day when you get to meet our great Creator God face to face? I don't know exactly what I'm going to say. I don't know what I'm going to feel, but all I know is I'm going to feel about that tall. I'm going to feel humble. Now let's turn to Job 42 and verse 5, and then we'll see how this plays right into this too, because Job was really confident of his own righteousness, and he was. But in verse 5, he says, I've heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. He says, now I see you. Imagine the day when we see God. I abhor myself now in dust and ashes. So number one is we're going to see God clearly by first meeting him. We're going to be humbled. The second is we're going to see Jesus Christ. Let's turn over to Philippians 2 and verse 5. Philippians 2 and verse 5 through 8. You know, we know the Passover. We know Jesus Christ sacrificed himself for us. But when we see him in full strength and in full power, the creator of everything that ever existed, and we realize that he gave up all of that, and he became a little baby. I mean, he didn't even start as a grown man. He gave up everything and he became a little baby. A little baby that was cold and shivering and maybe even crying. Then he became a little boy. He did this all because he cares that much. He emptied himself out totally because he wants us to be saved. When we see that, how humble are we going to feel? I mean, we understand that, but when we really see it, when we're looking at him and know what he did completely, we're going to feel humbled. So Philippians 2 in verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. This is the Apostle Paul, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. He knew he was God. He created everything. He says, but he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. And he became obedient to death. Well, we know the. But I mean, the point is when we see him, when we know that with our minds, but when we actually are there, I know I'm going to feel about, again, so thankful. And number three subpoint under this, we will see God clearly, is we will see how many times he's been faithful. Every prayer that went up to God, every time we asked for some healing, every time he made a promise to us, and because it didn't come right away, or we had to maybe wait to die, we prayed for our friend to be healed. But guess what? God had something better. He was going to heal him when he gives him a new body. What kind of healing is that? Every promise that God has ever given to us, he will keep. He's faithful. And when we see how faithful he is, that we can trust him completely, it's going to be a humbling, so very humbling feeling. I mean, we could think about this thing and meditate on this thing for hours. Number two, under our other points, so we'll see God clearly. Number two is we will see ourselves clearly. In Romans 13, or 3:16, we don't need to turn there, but it says, there is no one that seeks God. There is no one that's righteous. So, okay, on this first day of our change, we're going to see ourselves clearly. What are we going to see? That we didn't deserve it, we didn't earn it, and that God created this righteousness in us. He was the one that changed us. He's the one that got rid of our human nature and replaced it with his nature. We probably don't need to turn there either. We know in Hebrews 12, right after the faith chapter. What does it say? Jesus Christ, the author and finisher of our faith. That Jesus Christ is doing all the work. It's going to be humbling. We're going to see ourselves. Yeah, I really didn't do anything. We weren't even called. We don't create the calling. God the Father calls us. And Jesus Christ perfects us. So under seeing ourselves clearly, number two is, well, we're going to see him for like he is. 1 John 3, 2. Let's turn there. This one is very powerful. This is the one that we realize what we really see what God is doing. 1 John 3 and 2. Beloved, now we children of God, we are the children of God. It has not been revealed yet what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. This is really pretty clear. And it's just, it's mind-boggling because it's so big. Can we even understand it? But when we live through that, it will be humbling. And number two, under seeing ourselves clearly, we'll see how small we were. we're going to be now spirit beings. We're going to think back and think, you know, the man I introduced, he says, I walked around with a cane. I ached every day. I couldn't think straight. Now he's going to have a new body and a new mind. How small were we? And even the mistakes we made. We're not going to beat ourselves up with guilt, but I would just like to think of the Apostle Paul. Checking for my time. the Apostle Paul who made some mistakes. You know, Jesus Christ struck him down and he says, why are you, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he went, what? You know, persecuting the creator of the universe? That's what I've been doing? He realized what he was doing wrong. And look, he took that mistake that he made. And even though God totally erased it, he says, my grace is sufficient for you. Paul took that and he used that as energy. He used that as his drive. He used that humility that he was humbled and he worked harder than probably anybody that's ever worked in this world. He sacrificed, he worked, he conditioned himself, he diligently served God. That's the kind of vision we'll have of ourselves. Oh, I could have did more. I could have did better. We're not going to be guilty beating ourselves up because our sins will be gone, but we know we could have did more. The other thing about this is seeing ourselves clearly. If even though we're changed and we're now spirit beings, we're just starting out. We're going to be just starting. We're going to be like infants, like babies, just getting the first. We won't instantly have everything downloaded into our minds. If you think of this, if you think of a giant circle, it's the fullness of God. And if we understand one little sliver of that circle, we don't understand God and what he's doing. We only understand a little circle, and even some of that might be a little bit off. Through the lens that we view things, we might be holding, you know, I'm not saying the doctrines. The doctrines we know, but we probably have impressions and we have ideas of it's going to be this way or that way. We might be off on that stuff. We're going to be starting out as newborn babes. We were small and we're going to start out small. We're going to be God's children, but we're still going to be learning. We're going to be babies. The other part about this, of seeing ourselves clearly, is it's not all about me. What's heaven going to be like? There's 10,000 times 10,000 angels just around the throne? What is that? And what am I in the middle of all of this spiritual world, which we don't even see, and the universe blows us our minds away? What about when we get into the spirit world? You know, right now, because our minds are encapsulated in our bodies, everything seems like it's about me. But when we're freed from this and we're on our first day, it's not going to be all about me. We're going to see the universe. We're going to see the angels. We're going to see all of God's creation. The other thing what we're going to see is, and this one I've used before in messages, is we're going to be, on God's team, we're going to be seeing our other brethren. We're going to see the greats of the Bible. You know, how will I feel if I'm standing next to, let's say, Moses? You know, I'm not going to feel like, oh, wow. What if we find somebody that's been in the Middle Ages, and they had to walk a whole day's journey to get to the Sabbath. They better not be carrying a Bible, because if one of the Roman soldiers finds them with a Bible, they're going to be dipped in tar and they're going to be used as a pulse light on the road. All the sacrificing that these people have done, he's going to tell me about his life, and then he's going to ask me, and I'll say, well, I had a 2-hour drive to services in an air-conditioned car. He's going to say, what's an air-conditioned car? I mean, and not that we're going to compare again and put ourselves down, but we're going to be part of something that's bigger than us, and it's going to be humbling. So we're going to see ourselves clearly, and it will be humbling. Another part of this humbling is that God truly, truly loves everyone, and he wants everyone saved. It's not just us few good ones. He wants everyone saved, and that's what's the beauty of the feast here. Is that it shows his plan is for everybody. We're going to see it on the eighth day. We see it in the millennium. It's going to be when we truly see what's in God's heart, that everybody is his children, we're going to say, you know, I was kind of selfish all this time, thinking it's all about me. God wants everyone saved, not just me. Okay, and now for our third part of our vision that's going to be clarified, is we're going to see our future service. No. In John 21:17, Jesus Christ so told Peter, he says, "Do you love me?" And Peter, "I love you." And God and Jesus Christ knew that Peter loved him. He says, "If you love me, feed my lambs." Now, this was, if we turn over to 2 Peter 1 and 12, and I'd like to just give a little support here to Mr. Peter Ekema, because there's probably a good reason he turned there. I'm a little brother too, and my big brother picks on me all the time, and I'm sticking up for the little brother, because that was good that you turned it there, because 2 Peter 1 and 12 is a beautiful, beautiful verse. Let's see if I can find it here. I'll be reading the wrong one. Second Peter 1. Where was it first? Oh, I was going to brag him up, that, and I missed it. Oh, boy. Yeah. First Peter. Well, why can't I find it? You know, there's a reason why he couldn't find it. This is tricky. I thought I highlighted it this morning. 12, 2. Well, anyways, I can remember it from memory. But Peter says, as long as I am in this temporary body, he says, this is what's in his heart. Did he love Jesus Christ? On the first day of Acts, right after the Holy Spirit, he stands up and he gives a sermon that pricks the heart of everybody, and there's 3,000 added the first day. What was driving Peter? Because he loved Jesus Christ. He loved him. He says, if you love me, feed my sheep. This is going to be our chance. When we see our future service, we talk about being kings and priests. We're going to be covering the world with water. It's right now a desert, but it's going to be covering like the ocean floor. If you love me, feed my lambs. So what does Peter say here? He says, as long as I'm in this tent, I will remind you of all these precious truths. He says, because I'm about to depart, and he knew he was going to be crucified. But he says, as long as I'm breathing, I will teach you. I will guide you. You are Jesus Christ's sheep, and I'm going to feed you because I love him. That's going to be our attitude. Our future service is not, you know, I'm going to be pretty great, and everyone's going to come to me because I know I have all this knowledge. No, we're going to promote God's truth because we love Jesus Christ. The other thing is, on that scene, our service, our future service, clearly, there's going to be no more competition, no more politics. No more promoting ourselves. It's going to be synergy. We're going to make everyone else look good. We're going to use all our effort possible to make somebody else succeed, somebody else look good, not about me making me look good. I'm not going to go to God and say, you know, there might have been a mistake here. I'm only over one city, and my wife is over 10 cities. Was that a mistake? And he'll say, well, no, she had to build a lot of character living with you. And I'll say, oh, see, it's not going to be a competition. We're working together. We're going to be working as a team. We're a team. We're part of a team together. We're going to make each other better. We're learning that now through family. All of that splits. The humility that we're going to have is going to end splitting. It's going to end division. And it's going to end the lack of zeal that encompasses us now, because we have too much pride. The other thing is, in our calling, is we're going to see God's perspective. This was very interesting. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 13 and 12. I heard one time a man's, and I thought it was a very good analogy. Let's say a family, and the woman's pregnant, and there's a little fetus in the womb. Now, we have no idea how smart this little baby is, but he's maybe really pretty smart. He knows his mama's voice. He knows when his mama's laughing. He probably knows when his mama's crying. He's a little life. He's got intelligence. Now, the father is going to explain to this fetus, you're going to come out of there, and you're going to be able to eat and drink, and you're going to be able to breathe on your own. Then you're going to go to school. He says, then you're going to go to high school. Then you're going to go to college and learn a trade, and then you're going to find a beautiful lady someday and fall in love, and then you're going to have your own kids. Okay, he's telling this all to the fetus. What is the fetus going to think? It's as high as heaven is higher than the earth, because that's how deep God is. He's going to try to explain to us what it's like to live in a spiritual reality. It's like us trying to explain to that fetus you're gonna go experience all these things. It's just hearing beautiful voices in a nice gentle tone, and this is how high God is. He's trying to communicate to us all these deep things, but we can't get it because we are just small. It's amazing how much pride we can have considering how small we really are. A half a day without food and all of a sudden we're like just about passing out. But yet we strut around and we think, I'm not picking on anyone in mind here. But it's just our human nature. We all know we have it. We think we're really hot stuff. And we are really nothing. It would turn over to 1 Corinthians 13 and 12. 1 Corinthians 13, 12. It says, but now I see in a mirror or through the glass dimly. But then face to face. Okay, so right now we have no idea what our job is, our future service is going to be to God. We have an idea because we hear it every year at the feast. Every sermonette, every message we hear is shaping us to get a clear vision of that. But we see through the glass darkly. We can't comprehend this stuff. But on the first day we're going to be so charged. We're going to be like Peter with the foot right to the floor. Everything we do is going to be to, because we love God, because He's given us a job, and we're going to do it with the best we can. We see through the glass darkly, but then we're going to see it totally. Revelation 21 and 6. One more aspect of this, seeing our future services, we're going to see it through God's eyes. I don't know when this dawned on me, but this phrase just jumped out at me like unbelievable. Let's start in verse 5. Then he sat on the throne and said, behold, I make all things new. Everything is going to be new. And he said to him, write these words down, true and faithful. And then he said to me, it is done. Now, why did that hit me so hard? Because God is goal-oriented. Jesus Christ, He sees the end. Right now, from what the end is, when all the physical is done its service and it's not needed anymore, everything temporary, everything physical. We learn this at the feast. It's all going to be done. And He will say, it is done. And how many steps are between it is done and right now? Millions? Maybe even billions. We have so much work to do before we can see when Jesus Christ wants to give His Father the most perfect gift anyone could ever give. He's going to give them the family, completely tied up in a beautiful bowl. And my Father, here's our family. That's what's driving Jesus Christ. And when we see that vision, we're going to catch on to that vision. And that's going to be pure energy in our tank. It's going to be humility. It's going to be love for God. It's going to be love for each other. Instead of trying to compare and push each other down, we're going to be building each other up, tying ourselves together. So now, this doesn't sound like a typical feast sermon, but it is. You know why? Because even though this is in the future, this humbling process, we can have that humbling process now. And in fact, we might need it now if we're going to be there. Because if we are going to be blind and self-righteous, we might not be there. The church in Laodicea is more than just lukewarm. You know, the Sardis era is lack of love, they're lukewarm and dead. They're just going through the motions. The Ephesians, they lost their first love. But what about the Laodicean people, the ones that God's talking about that will live at the end time? What is their problem? They are so arrogant they can't see that they don't know anything. I don't need anything. I don't need anything. What is that, an arrogant statement or what? I don't need it. You don't need anything. And they don't realize that they're blind. And if you notice, these three points that I have were vision, a clarity, a kind of being able to see something better. If you're blind, you can't see those things. He says you are actually naked. You're blind and you're naked. So imagine walking around with no pants on. That'd be pretty bad. But that's what they're doing, because of their self-righteousness has got them blind. And we know the other, so we need to work, we need to apply this now. The other direct message for us at the end time is the 10 virgins. You know, I think we all agree, we can all feel it in the air. Things are happening. Things are changing. There's things happening. If we don't have a sense of urgency now, we might really be in trouble. We need to be God is giving us time. He's giving us messages to wake up, to get ready, to fill our lamps full of oil. He's giving us time. We can feel it in air. We better do something now, or it might not happen. We might not be there. We need that humility. We need to fill the lamps full of oil now. There's really no time to wait. And we could go on about this. But I would just like to summarize this. We'll let the Bible summarize this. If we turn to Micah 6 and verse 8, this will be our conclusion, because we can meditate on this. We can fellowship about this. There's a very good spirit here this year. We're all fellowshipping, building each other up. We're caring about each other. We're helping each other through that fellowship see the urgency of the time. God wants us to fill our lamps full of oil. We've been given the warning. Micah 6 and verse 8. You know, I got a new Bible because the little one I had, I was holding up like this. You know, this big one, I can't move around in it. I can't win. This will summarize everything. He has shown you, O man, what is good. So what is good? What does God require of you? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.